Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on today's program is Ray C. Anderson. His new book is Confessions of a Radical Industrialist, Profits, People, Purpose, Doing Business by Respecting the Earth. Ray Anderson was named one of Time Magazine's Heroes of the Environment and one of MSNBC.com's top 15 green business leaders in 2007. His company and he have been featured in the New York Times, Fortune, Fast Company, and many other publications. And he's been featured in three documentary films. He's the chairman of Interface Corporation. He co-chaired the President's Council on Sustainable Development and the Presidential Climate Action Project. Welcome to Edgewise, Ray.
Oh, happy to be here. Thank you, Dave.
To begin with, why don't you tell us a little bit about the founding of Interface?
I was working in a perfectly good job with a perfectly good company in 1973 when I saw an idea that just struck me as so right and so smart. Carpet tiles. I saw them in Europe for the first time. Modular carpet. In that era, the open office was just developing with walls disappearing in the electrical wiring going into the floor and various kinds of ductwork. And that kind of office just demanded carpet tiles for easy access to those electricals in the floor. So I left my job and got backing from an English company, Carpets International, at the time the largest carpet manufacturer in the world outside of the United States, who had the technology that I saw appropriate to the American marketplace. So we formed what you would call today, I guess, a joint venture. Started from absolute scratch, from just the idea to bring carpet tiles to America. We built a factory, and we started up in the teeth of the worst recession since 1929. And we survived, which is the first miracle of Interface. And by 1975, 76, through the rest of the 70s, we were on a growth path of doubling every 3 years, 70% compound growth. It was an amazing success coming out of the recession. And 10 years from inception, we went public.
And then you got started with this whole Going Green initiative way back in 1994, before it really was a hot topic.
Yep.
Yours was the first company to become truly sustainable.
I'm sure there were other companies who were actually ahead of us, primarily in the food industry and maybe in the apparel industry. But I guess we were the first company our size to recognize not only the imperative, but the great advantage of sustainability as a core value. We set out in 1994 to climb this mountain. We call it Mount Sustainability. And Mission Zero, that's what we now call this initiative to climb this mountain clear to the top. And that point at the top symbolizes the zero environmental impact to which we aspire.
In fact, you wrote a book about that experience, Mid-Course Correction, and that was published in 1998.
I told the story in there of the founding of the company and also this epiphany that I had myself. It came about because our customers began to ask a question we had never heard before. That summer of 1994, what's your company doing for the environment? And we had no answers. By this time, Interface was a global company doing business in 110 countries with manufacturing on four continents. So we created a task force to get some answers. We brought people together from our businesses around the world to form this task force. And the organizers of the task force insisted that I must address the task force and launch it with my environmental vision. Well, I didn't have an environmental vision. I didn't want to make that speech to that little group. I cannot get beyond, we obey the law, comply. But I knew somehow that comply was not exactly a vision. So I began to sweat. I could not get the first idea of what to say beyond comply. It was a propitious moment. I'm sweating and this book lands on my desk. It is Paul Hawkins' book, The Ecology of Commerce. I pick it up. I begin to thumb through it. On page 19, I come to a chapter heading, The Death of Birth. And I began to read, and I came quickly to understand that that was about species extinction. And then Hawkins made the central point of his book in three parts. One, the biosphere that supports all of life on Earth is in decline. Two, the biggest culprit in this is the industrial system that takes from the earth to make products that end up as waste in a landfill or stream or the atmosphere, and it's wasting its gone forever. And then the third point that he makes is there's only one institution on earth that's truly large enough and powerful enough and pervasive enough and wealthy enough to lead humankind out of this mess that we're making for ourselves. And it's the same institution that's doing the damage. It's the institution of business and industry, my institution. Well, that was an epiphanal experience. I made that speech using Hawkins materials, and I challenged that little group of people to lead our company to sustainability, which we defined as operating a petro-intensive company in such a way as to take not another drop of oil from the earth, take nothing, do no harm, zero environmental footprint. Well, that's 17 years ago, and we're still climbing that mountain, and we hope to reach the summit by the year 2020. So you can see it's a long-term commitment. It's certainly not the program of the week or the month or even the year. It's the program of a lifetime.
Okay, now when you made that announcement, Wall Street claimed that being environmentally alert would cost money. And you saw this as taking a bite out of waste and over the long run, saving money.
That's exactly right. The general mindset in the business community is that it costs to reduce your environmental impact. We found a way that it wouldn't. We tackled waste as our very first initiative and set out to eliminate waste, the very concept of waste. And we began to save money from day one. And then as the plan developed for how you actually climb this whole mountain, the waste savings were paying the way every step of the way for the investments that we made, for the expenses we incurred, the training and all the rest that went with reorienting an entire company. We thought of our company in a total systems way. The idea here is to, in effect, optimize this entire company, not just this piece of it or that piece of it, in terms of sustainability and operating expenses. How do you move an entire company from here to there? How do you redefine its purpose in such a way that it's good for business and it's also good for the earth? We managed to do that.
Right. And the money that you saved actually went into the development of the business.
Well, we didn't say we're going to take all of our savings and reinvest them here or there. We just were accumulating the savings on the one hand, and we were making judicious investments on the other.
Now, do you think that in light of the economy today, it's even more important to make that kind of investment than it was 15 years ago?
The earth has fewer resources today than it had 15 years ago because industry has been gobbling it up. Every day, we're gobbling up resources that the earth cannot reproduce, non-renewable resources. How long can this go on? Well, maybe 100 years, maybe 200 years. But there will come a day when one after another, these resources are gone forever. So the imperative is even greater today than it was then in terms of preserving the earth and the environment and the ecology of the whole thing. And at the same time, we've got a marketplace that is much more sensitized to the environment. We were fortunate in having this little group of customers, interior designers and architects, who really cared way back then. Today, you've got many, many, many more people who are sensitized to the environment and the imperatives of changing the business model and reducing this environmental footprint that we're all guilty of.
And the decision you made has also given the company a much more powerful marketplace differentiator.
Without a doubt, in business, if you're first with a big idea, you win. And being first with a really big idea with tremendous marketplace appeal was a win-win from the very beginning. If you want to understand the business case for sustainability, the goodwill of the marketplace ranks right up there at the very top. Also, this whole waste elimination effort has driven our costs down more than we've spent. And the people, my goodness, our people are galvanized around this shared higher purpose. Maslow said it a long time ago. People need this higher purpose with which to be identified. And this has given our people that very thing. And our products are the best they've ever been. Designing products for sustainability has opened up a whole raft of innovations that we never would have dreamed of, frankly, without the sustainability driver.
That's phenomenal. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Right. For example, our lead product designer, just fell in love with Jeanine Benya's book, Biomimicry, Nature as Inspiration. How would nature do this? It's a wonderful book, and it's a wonderful field that is just developing. And she was among the first to grasp the profound effect that could have on product design. So he said to his people one day, let's go see how nature would design a floor covering. And they went into the woods, and they spent a day in the woods looking at the ground, the forest floor. And it finally dawned on them, it's beautiful, there's a uniformity in it all, but if you narrow it down to a square foot or a square yard, there are no two alike. Nature's passion is diversity. So they came back to the design studio, and they designed a carpet tile, a modular carpet, such that they all belong in the same family of design, but no two are alike. And when we introduced the product to the marketplace, it took off like a rocket because it had all kinds of advantages that we never anticipated. For example, somebody spills a cup of coffee. You could replace an individual tile, and you could not tell where the old one had been. The new one blended right in with the old. And then we found that our customers could move carpet tiles around on their floor to equalize the wear patterns. Advantage after advantage after advantage began to emerge. You don't have to keep dye lots separate anymore. They all go together. The advantages that were totally unanticipated made the product the bestseller. And today, it and many more of the same design concept represent 40% of our sales.
All right. Now, you mentioned you have set this mission zero. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yep. We're somewhere better than 60% of the way, but in some areas we have done much, much better than that. For example, landfill waste is down 80%. Water intake is down 80% per unit of product. Our total energy usage is down 43%. But when we factor in the renewable energy that we're using and the verified offsets that we are creating, we have reduced our net greenhouse gases 94%. And that's in absolute tonnage for a company that's even bigger today than when we drew the baseline in 1995. So we've done an awful lot on the climate issue, that is the greenhouse gas issue. In Europe, 100% of our electricity is coming from renewable sources. It's 89% worldwide. We have produced 111 million square yards of climate neutral carpet since 2003. We call it cool carpet, and it has been a market bombshell. Our customers love the idea of cool carpet, and we give them a certificate that says your carpet is produced climate neutral. We have reclaimed 100,000 tons, that's 200 million pounds, of product from the floor after its first life and brought it back through what we call re-entry to give it life after life through the recycling process. We have offset 200 million airline passenger miles by planting trees. And our overall footprint reduction is somewhere north of 60%. And the cumulative avoided waste, remember the thing that's paying the way here, is $433 million since 1994. So our costs are down. And waste elimination is paying for the entire mountain climb.
I took a look at a study from MIT and the Boston Consulting Group of embracers and cautious adopters of sustainability. Among the embracers, the number's about 66% of corporations today. And among cautious adopters, it's 23%. But every one of those companies is actually embracing your philosophy.
Right.
And it's the opinion of MIT and Boston Consulting that this will represent a new management approach for corporate America.
That's exactly what we're pioneering at Interface. The whole industrial world needs a new business model, one that does not gobble up non-renewable resources. And what we're doing at Interface is creating that better business model. It has application today, it will have application tomorrow, it will have application 100 years from now, or 1,000 years from now if humankind is still around.
Okay, let's take a look at what your plan is.
This mountain that we're climbing called Mount Sustainability, the first face of the mountain is waste. We've already talked about that. The second face, renewable energy. We want to drive our industrial processes with sunlight, or its first derivative, wind power, and get off of oil altogether. The next face of the mountain is emissions. We want to be sure that we are emitting nothing into the biosphere, nothing into the air or the water that is harmful to the earth. You'd be surprised at how difficult that is, because what comes into our factories will go out, either as product or as waste or emissions. So we've got to be really careful about the raw materials we select to be sure that the emissions they turn into are harmless to the environment. And then we want to operate our factories the way nature operates, recycling everything. Nature's processes are all cyclical. So you have this reentry program that we've already developed, and we're well up that particular face of the mountain, creating cyclical flows, closing the loop. And then there is the face of the mountain that's influencing others. When we had that first meeting with that first task force, I not only challenged that group of people to lead our company to sustainability, but beyond, to make Interface a restorative company, putting back more than we take and doing good for the earth, not just no harm, to be a positive factor for the earth. And they said, that sounds like perpetual motion. How in the world would you do that? And as we talked about it, we came to the conclusion that if we could really get a clear vision of what sustainability meant for Interface and began to move in a credible, demonstrable, measurable, transparent way towards that, something else just might happen. We might influence other companies to do the same thing. And that's how we become restorative, through the power of our influence on others, even competitors. And today I will tell you, every single competitor is doing something to move their company towards sustainability, to reduce their footprint. Finally, we want to eventually reinvent the way we go to market. Today, we go to market with products that we sell, but those products deliver a service: acoustical value and comfort underfoot, ambiance, functionality. Why don't we just sell the service and retain ownership in the stuff, the means of delivering the service? We set out to do that, and we found ourselves all tangled up in all kinds of Internal Revenue Code restrictions. So we eventually had to back away from that until we could talk the feds into getting the laws right. But it is something that's coming one of these days.
All right. Now, when a company wants to follow your footsteps, what's the first step they should take?
The first thing to do is sit down with your accountants and your manufacturing people and figure out just what do we take from the earth to make our product or our service, and go all the way up the supply chain, all the way back to the beginning, to the wellhead and to the mine, and figure out what you have to take from the earth to produce your product and service. I know when I had our people do that, I was flabbergasted in how much was needed for us to run our factories. Any industrialist that does that will have his eyes opened. And you ask yourself, in a $60 trillion economy, how long can this go on? There's a limit. The earth has a carrying capacity. It can support only so many of us and so many of our businesses.
That's true, unfortunately. What else can they do?
They can contact us. We've created a consulting arm that works with companies that want to do it but don't quite know how and want to shorten their learning curves. It's a for-profit enterprise. It's delivering real value in terms of shortening those learning curves.
Now, when you use that term, sustainability, you're referring to the environment, but increasingly I'm hearing the term referring to corporate success.
What are your thoughts on that?
I'll have to say that in the beginning, we focused strictly on the environment, but we need to look at the corporate social responsibility dimension more deeply and more broadly. So at the initiative of our own people, we're beginning to measure sociometrics to go alongside the ecometrics. Ecometrics are measuring our impacts on the environment. The sociometrics are measuring our impacts on society. And what are we doing to make those positive rather than negative? We're counting the hours that our people spend in community service and the money that our people contribute to the NGO world. And there's a plethora of sociometrics that we're now beginning to track. And they belong in the equation that leads to that zero footprint.
Ray, I know you co-chaired the President's Council on Sustainable Development and the Presidential Climate Action Project, and you're a screen figure now. You've been in these three documentary films, including The Corporation and So Right, So Smart, about your accomplishments.
we have a group of people that have been doing our camera work for years and years. It's an independent company. At sales meetings, they are taping the speeches, and they've accumulated quite a library of tapes to show the evolution of the company, and they put together these documentaries.
All right, could you explain what greenwashing is?
You know what whitewash is. Say I've got this rotten fence and I've splashed some whitewash on it. The fence may look pretty good, but it's still rotten at its core. The term greenwash has come into use to describe those false claims, those exaggerated claims about what a company is doing, that coat of green on an otherwise rotten situation. Generally speaking, the public sees through it, but it sometimes can be so cleverly portrayed, particularly in television commercials, that people are taken in by it. The real deal is to be able to show real results and not just talk about what we have done, but talk about how much further we have to go. Now, I can talk about we're 60% of the way there, but I also have to say we got 40% of the way to go. And the 40% is going to be very, very difficult, and we all know it, but we're determined to make it to the top of that mountain. So there's a genuineness that needs to be discovered in all of these claims about what a company is doing.
We've been talking to Ray C. Anderson, author of the new book, Confessions of a Radical Industrialist, Profits, People, Purpose, Doing Business by Respecting the Earth. Thanks, Ray.
Well, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to have been with you, Dave.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.